Kendall Bailey was born with serious mental and physical disabilities, including cerebral palsy. And as Alan Schwartz reported in the New York Times today, he may be possibly the fastest disabled breaststroker in the world. Just a few months ago, Kendall Bailey swam the 100-meter breaststroke in 1 minute, 15.8 seconds, fast enough to qualify to go to Beijing to compete in the Paralympics, the Games for Disabled Athletes that come 2 weeks after the Olympic Games. It's rare for an athlete with both intellectual and physical disabilities to qualify, and a couple of months ago, the head of the U.S. Paralympics wrote a letter to the International Committee that asked that Kendall Bailey be disqualified. Alan Schwartz's story describes his mother's desperate efforts to make sure he stays on the team and gets to swim in Beijing. If you read Alan's piece, if you have questions for him, give us a call. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also weigh in on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation, where you can also find a link to Alan Schwartz's piece on the front page of this morning's Times. Alan Schwartz is with us from our bureau in New York. And Alan, always good to have you on the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Glenn. Neil, I'm sorry.
Let's go to the lead of the story. Is Kendall Bailey going to be allowed to compete?
Yes, he is eligible to compete in the Paralympic Games. And the reason that the United States wrote a letter requesting his ineligibility was because of procedural errors that they believed had existed in the in his classification as physically disabled. Those concerns were not shared by the International Paralympic Committee, and they were viewed as somewhat dubious, and the manner in which the United States acted was viewed to be quite incorrect by the IPC. And so now the Kendall Bailey's mother tried to get answers for 2 months, and she was kind of left twisting in the wind. And only in the past couple of weeks, when I was able to make some phone calls, faceless bureaucracies tend not to take phone calls from mothers in San Diego, but they take phone calls from the New York Times. And I was kind of able to get to the bottom of it and find out that Kendall Bailey is eligible. He will swim in Beijing, and he might even break the world record when he's there. It's an unbelievable story, well beyond the issues that U.S. Paralympics entered into the equation a couple of months ago. This is a young man who is autistic, has Klinefelter syndrome, cerebral palsy, and is mentally retarded, but he is so comfortable in water. He's so uncomfortable out of it. But in water, he transforms into somebody incredibly comfortable and an incredibly good swimmer. And his life story is remarkable, well beyond the actions of the United States in the past couple of months.
We'll get to those issues in just a minute. But you said they were seeking clarifications on his eligibility. That's not what the letter said. In terms of relief sought, this is according to your story, the appeal requested the IPC, quote, nullify Bailey's physical disability status and render him ineligible.
Well, I'm here to report, what I was told. And when I called the people who filed the appeal, they insisted over and over that they were merely seeking clarification. When I explained that that's not what clarification means, that clarification derives from the word clarity, which derives from the word clear, which means you're seeking some sort of clearness, not a specific outcome, and requesting ineligibility for your own athlete, they repeated 18 or 20 times in different ways that they were merely seeking clarification. So that is all I can tell you here, is that's what they say.
The suspicion was that, in fact, they were uncomfortable with an athlete, a para-athlete, who is difficult when he is out of the water.
Well, Kendall Bailey has the emotional temperament of a toddler. He is very difficult to be with when he is uncomfortable. He will not eat. He can fly into rages. Now, not ones that are dangerous for other people. He is not violent, but he can throw tantrums and throw fits like a 3-year-old, even though he's 19 and 6'6" and quite an imposing presence. And so it was certainly plausible to think that perhaps the United States officials didn't want that distraction in Beijing, when they're trying to win medals with athletes who are merely amputees or paralyzed, or they certainly, in general, do not have any mental or emotional disabilities. Now, let me say that the officials at U.S. Paralympics said very clearly this had nothing to do with Kendall Bailey's emotional state or mental state. They said that it was merely that they wanted clarification on his status. And so it's not for me to speculate. I know that the mother, having, you know, spent 19 years looking after her son and having met people who didn't want to deal with him, she is concerned that perhaps that was at play here. But something is very important to note. It's that U.S. Paralympics and the people who did this thing and asked for his ineligibility, which appears to be misguided and ill-conceived, at least that's what the International Paralympic Committee said. These are people who have devoted their working lives to developing opportunities and competition for disabled athletes. It's very difficult to think that they acted out of malice or disrespect. I don't know why they did what they did, but it would be wrong to assume that it was done out of malice. I think I don't know what it was beyond that, but it is not logical to think that was the reason.
We've got a caller on the line. And by the way, if you'd like to join Alan Schwartz in this conversation about the Paralympic Games and an autistic athlete, also physically disabled, who qualified and then ran into questions about his qualifications, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Irfan. Irfan with us from Chicago.
Hello there.
Hi there.
Yes, I would not. I had a question regarding the qualification, because I'm following, like, South African athlete and the current story. I just had a question. Who sits down and decides mental health won't be taken or physical health won't be taken? Because I'm practicing physical therapist. I see cerebral palsy, I see Klinefelter syndrome, and I see the autistic child, too. So I just have this random question regarding the qualification of them.
I can answer that. First of all, the South African athlete that this gentleman is referring to is a runner named Oscar Pistorius, whose leg was amputated
and the current athlete, both of them. So basically, like,
right.
He had problems with the qualification with the current normal people, and this guy who is mentally disabled but physically able to swim. So I had a question regarding that qualification.
Okay. Basically, the Paralympics exist for people with certain physical disabilities to compete against each other. Needless to say, every athlete must reach some level of physical disability in order to participate. I can't just show up with no physical disability and run a race. So each athlete has to be determined to have some level of physical disability. The classification in which Kendall Bailey resides is one for cerebral palsy with a certain level of muscular impairment. Now, his mental disabilities are wholly irrelevant. They have nothing to do with it. However, they were very distracting in this case, and they caused great confusion among people who got very distracted by them. However, according to the International Paralympic Committee, because they have people who examine the athletes, they watch them perform, they examine their bodies, not unlike horses. I mean, they check to see muscle spasticity and various things. Obviously, if someone is an amputee, it's pretty obvious. However, in a case like Kendall Bailey, he went through several rounds of inspection, and it was determined by the experts at the International Paralympic Committee that he qualified for the physical disability classification of S10. I won't get into all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it's done, is they inspect the athlete and make sure that he has a certain level of disability. Otherwise, it wouldn't be fair. It's all done to be fair.
Yeah.
So basically, you're saying that it's not subjective.
No, it is subjective. It's objective and subjective. I mean, how do you measure muscle spasticity? How do you measure, you know, the type of range of motion that they want to make sure, frankly, you don't have in certain respects.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
And just a couple of points of clarification. Oscar Pistorius was challenging the right to compete in the regular Olympic Games, running on prosthetic legs that some thought gave him an advantage over regular able-bodied runners. He has since been found he can compete on those if he is fast enough to qualify. And we've had him on the show, and he said maybe not this time, but 4 years from now, he thinks he's going to be able to do that. The other question is, I think there's some confusion, Alan, between the Paralympic Games and the Special Olympics.
Yes, the Paralympic Games are very, very competitive. It is for athletes with certain physical disabilities, like paralysis, and so they're wheelchair racers or discus throwers or whatnot, or basketball players. Also amputees, so you can be a runner and merely running on a prosthesis. Cerebral palsy, where your reflexes and strength are compromised. It is very competitive, very serious, and a lot of money and training goes into it. And there are medals given to the top three. However, the Special Olympics are for people with intellectual or mental disabilities. They exist purely to celebrate participation and the ability to simply compete and have a good time. Everybody receives a medal or a ribbon. It is not anything close. It is not competitive virtually at all. But the Paralympics are serious business.
We're talking with Alan Schwartz of the New York Times. His front page story today, A Disabled Swimmer's Dream, A Mother's Fight, 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Alan, the other part of the story was Kendall Bailey's mom, who was terrified by the idea that her son, to whom this meant everything, would get to Beijing and then find out that he would be disqualified when he got there.
Well, she was told by the United States Paralympic Committee that that was not only possible, it was downright likely, and that he could very well, upon arrival in Beijing, be disqualified because he wasn't physically disabled enough. And it terrified her. I mean, that's what they based their request to the IPC on, is the likelihood that he's just going to be disqualified anyway. Well, and she felt that this asteroid was speeding toward her head and her family's house for the past 2 months. And only on Monday did I finally get to the bottom of it and learn from the International Paralympic Committee that there is virtually no chance that that would ever happen in Beijing, only under exceptional circumstances. I won't get into the details, but those circumstances would not exist in this case. And that the United States had it wrong for 2 months. Regardless of how they handled it, they had it wrong and scared the dickens out of this poor woman.
And did Kendall himself know about this, that this might be a possibility?
Kendall Bailey has no idea that any of this has been going on. His mother never told him because he wouldn't understand. And what he could understand, he would not be able to comprehend, in the sense that his own team tried to keep him from swimming. He would have not understood. He would have been desperately upset. And, of course, had he gone to Beijing and then been told he can't swim, which is what the United States said would happen, he could have been ruined for life. And I'm not exaggerating. He could have just crawled up in a ball, crying, or flown into an uncontrollable rage, because this thing that has given him self-esteem and purpose over the last 6 years, the ability to represent the United States in the Paralympics, he wears his jersey everywhere, he sleeps under an American flag blanket every night. If he knew and understood that his own country tried to get him ineligible, he would have been more confused than even you or I or the reader or the listeners, and we're confused enough.
There's a wonderful scene you describe in your story of Kendall after winning the race, breaking the American record to qualify, and learning that he would qualify to go to Beijing. This boy who, when taken to school for the first time, in terror at strangers, ran up to the roof of the school and threw pebbles at people below. This boy greeted people on the airplane and signed autographs.
Yeah, he's never known what self-esteem was. He's never understood self-worth. And I'll tell you something that kind of broke my heart this morning. By the way, none of this feel-good stuff has to do with how I handled the USOC. I mean, they were given fair shot too. But in terms of the warmth of this story, I heard from his mother this morning, and Kendall saw his picture on the front page of the New York Times, and he asked her, "I'm important?" It's amazing.
What was his mother's reaction to the piece?
Well, she was thankful that I got it right. Let's just put it that way.
And Kendall, he saw his picture. Is he able to read the story?
he can read little things, but he couldn't understand the complicated parts. Frankly, a lot of people won't be able to understand it. But he saw the things about him winning the race that put him on the team, and he saw some things about his life, and he is now finding out, not through me in the New York Times, but through his success at swimming. I remember a line from a movie I liked very much. It said, if you have a, you know, when you finally get a taste of success, you find that it suits you.
Hmm.
This young man has had nothing go very right for him in 19 years, and this is all going right now, and he's finding out what it feels like to be good at something, and it's really quite wonderful to witness.
And you said earlier, he's got a chance to be the best in the world.
Yeah. His teammate, not emotionally, but he said that I honestly think he could win the gold medal. He's becoming so focused. His mind couldn't wrap around what it meant to compete against other people. He lives in his own little world. He does not relate to people. His autism, I don't want to overstate it, but he lives in his own little world. And now he's starting to think, okay, I want to be focused and swim as fast as I can and compete against other people. And when he started to embrace what that meant, he shocked everybody by breaking the American record in the 100-meter breaststroke for his classification. And so if he takes another step forward like that, he will be the best in the world.
Alan Schwartz, great piece. Thank you, and appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Neil, very much.
Alan Schwartz of the New York Times joined us from our bureau in New York. Our broadcast today was produced by Susan Lund. Drew Reynolds is our technical director. He gets help from Michael Cullen, Nathan Bark, Kurt Stalnaker, and Dennis Nielsen. We'd also like to thank the entire team here at the museum for their hospitality. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in the night studio at the museum in Washington, D.C.